So Roxanne puts on the red light.
Doesn't have to, though.
Doesn't have to, but Suzanne is all that I wanted in a girl?
Yes.
Okay, good.
That is exactly what it is.
I'm glad I didn't.
But Suzanne turned out to be a monkey, so, you know, what do you
got? Fuck you, Jay and Silent Bob.
This is Junk Food Cinema.
Hi, this is Dick Miller. You're listening to Junk Food Cinema on Film School Rejects. Who are these guys?
Welcome, everyone, to a particularly wordy episode of Junk Food Cinema right here on FilmSchoolRejects.com.
One might say verbose.
Verbose, loquacious.
Ooh.
All of the other synonyms that I learned from John Cusack and Con Air. You know, all of those. Hey, I'm Brian. He is Cargill. How's it going, Cargill?
Together, we are Junk Food Cinema.
Together, our powers combine.
We're doing all right. We're marathoning it today.
Man, there is so much beer and bacon in this house right now because we are stockpiling episodes.
We really are. I have some appearances to make. I have a new book coming out, which I'm really proud of, and people are digging. It's called Sea of Rust, and so I'm going on tour with it. And, of course, then we've got just all these other various events and craziness going on over the next few weeks and in the run-up to our favorite film festival on the planet, Fantastic Fest. So we're just like, well, let's kind of knock this out. And so, yeah, let's sit down and record a whole mess of episodes all at once.
So we're hoarding like the ant in that famous fable and not the... Wait, is the grasshopper the dickhead in that fable? I can't remember.
Frankly, they're both dickheads.
True story.
But
all bugs are dickheads.
The grasshopper is the asshole. The grasshopper is the rich kid who blows through his wealth and is letting... I'm so cold and hungry.
Do you hear that? Fuck you, David Carradine. The grasshopper... is the asshole in that story. By the way, speaking of assholes, you can find our whole back catalog on iTunes. You can also find it on Blog Talk Radio, where we are now hosted. Thank you very much. You can follow us on Twitter at Junk Food Cinema. Like the podcast on Facebook, facebook.com/junkfoodcinema. And if you really like all of our retelling of fables that your grandmother forced you to listen to, you can always go to patreon.com/junkfoodcinema and pledge a little bit of dough for as little as $4 a month. You get a bonus content out the wazoo. I still haven't figured out where on my body the wazoo is.
You don't know where your wazoo... Well, first of all, it's wazoo. Your wazoo sounds like a fantasy country.
Okay, so the wazoo. I bought a special mirror, and I've looked everywhere. Don't know where the wazoo is.
It's located immediately behind the taint.
Oh... You learn so much with the show. That's why it pays to be a patron. Speaking of nothing, because this segue is terrible, we are still wrapping up the summer of 1987. I actually had somebody message me and go, oh, you finished summer of 87. You didn't talk about this or this or this. I'm like, okay, when we say we're wrapping it up, it's like a Minnesota goodbye.
Yeah, yeah.
It takes a while for us
and
to
And let's face
finish.
It. I was going through it today and I'm like, fuck, we should just do an episode on all the movies we wanted to talk about and didn't talk about from this summer because, dear God, like we made a few segues. We like did two movies from March. We did two movies from October, which was kind of cheating, but that was a whole month of, yeah, but if we didn't cover these, what the fuck? But like there's so much stuff we didn't get to. We didn't get to Dragnet,
Hellraiser.
Like there's literally just going through the list, there's so many that now I'm blanking on the ones that I was like, oh shit, we never got. Oh yeah, no, we never got to My Demon Lover.
We could do an entire episode that was an hour of us doing essentially Billy Joel's We Didn't Start the Fire, just listing movies we haven't covered from 87
that we want to cover, like, because it's like really 87 just is so good, and a lot of these we'll cover in their own episodes in the future. Won't be a summer of 87.
That's the thing. The important thing to note is that we're not going off the air as soon as this summer ends. So these movies will get covered in one fashion.
Yeah, a couple of people have brought up, like, why haven't you done Hellraiser yet? And it's like, well, we're going to do Hellraiser, but I really want to do it as Hellraiser and Hellraiser 2 because they really do belong together. And I want to talk about those in one episode. So, yeah, we're going to get there.
Hellraiser 2, Back to the Beach.
Back to the Beach, also a movie from 1987 we didn't talk about.
Well done. Served and volleyed.
There you go. So, yeah, but yeah, there's a lot of this stuff we will get to, but it did give us a really great excuse to talk about stuff. And of course we've got two more full episodes, and then we've got our worst of, which will be kind of our wrap up of summer of 87, where we'll do the worst of, and we'll talk about, do some other stuff just talking about this summer. So,
speaking of volleyball, anticipate a lot of spiking going on with that particular
episode. We go. But let's get into this. It is the first of what I guarantee you folks will be at least two Steve Martin movies we'll cover in the back half of the year. I have a Steve Martin movie I absolutely have been dying to cover all summer, but is not summer of 87.
Look, I'm not talking about Cheaper by the Dozen 2. We've talked about this. I'm just not on board. I'm not on board with it at all.
You're going to do it. You're going to it'll be a redemption. No, we're not talking about
the only thing that's cheaper by the dozen are Taco Bell tacos when you buy the Crave case.
But so here we are with Roxanne.
C.D. Bales had a small problem.
They said it was big, but I didn't expect it to be big.
He could handle every situation. Except the one that mattered most.
Maybe you'd like some wine with your nose. Cheese.
I want to look like Diana Ross.
I think she's fallen in love, but she doesn't know it yet.
There's someone I think I should get to know better. His name's Chris McConnell.
This time I want you to do it, Dave. I want you to cut the thing off.
Maybe you could encourage him a little.
Look, she wants somebody who looks like me and talks like you.
So why'd you say those things?
Tell her you were afraid of worms.
Because I was afraid of worms, Roxanne. Worms.
Worms.
Love may be blind.
Get out.
Get in.
No, get out.
Get in.
But hopefully, Roxanne isn't. Steve Martin.
Hey.
Daryl Hannah.
Why don't you just get that nose job?
I did.
Roxanne.
And Roxanne is one of those just great, glorious films that whether you've seen it or not, you know what it is. Like, this is one of those movies that's like, wait, that's Steve Martin's Cyrano de Bergerac, right? Yes, it is.
And I love the sound, I can hear it if you listen very closely, of people's heads exploding at the fact that we've covered two romance films in a row.
Three.
Three romance films in a row. What podcast are you even listening to?
Yeah. We just need to whip it out and smack it on the table and just go, look, romantic films are junk food as well. That's kind of the fucking point.
Well, you know how to keep the romance going with things like we should whip it out and smack it on.
I will get you on board the romantic comedy train.
I was really worried about where that sentence was going after that segue, but
yeah.
Okay.
No, I will get you on the romantic comedy train.
You will run a rom-com train on me?
I totally will. No, I mean, it's the thing is romantic comedies are, you know, they're like Jean-Claude Van Damme films. Yes, you know how it's going to end. Yes, you know where every beat of that fucking movie is. You know at which point the best friend is going to be put in a coma and or killed so that he has to come back and beat the bad guy. You know what that, but that's why you fucking watch them.
Interesting.
And it's, you know, you watch them because boy meets girl, boy loses girl, boy gets girl back is the formula. You know by the end they're going to be together, but how they get there is why you're doing it. The journey is entirely the whole point. And that's what is so great about a movie like Roxanne. When you sit down and you go, oh, so the lead is Steve Martin, the romantic interest is Daryl Hannah, and I don't know the name of the actor playing the guy that she's actually having the flirtation with.
Rick Rossovich.
I wonder.
Not a professional wrestler, but sounds like a professional wrestler.
I wonder how this is going to turn out. You fucking know, but the whole point is how they get there and why they get there. And it is, in this case, it is really, really great. So by going and using this classic story and this classic play as the structure for this, you end up with a romantic comedy that's running on a slightly different version of the formula. And that is what is so fascinating about this. This, of course, Steve Martin wrote the screenplay. This was back when, you know, people were like, wait, Steve Martin writes? That was like a big revelation for people. He went on to write a really great play and has written a couple books. And he's, you know, now people are like, well, of course Steve Martin writes. He's, you know, he's a banjo player. He's a writer. He's an actor, a comedian. Like, he does it all. Mm-hmm. But at the time, people were like, whoa, you're an actor and a stand-up. What are you doing writing?
Well, that's one of the things that he talked about, why this movie was so rewarding for him, is that people didn't see it as, oh, there's that guy from stand-up who's being paid to be a stand-up. It was, they started to see him as an actor and as an artist, and this was kind of the first time that that had happened for him.
And it's got a brilliant bridge scene that we'll get to where he does both. Like, it's like, yes, this is what the audience wants, and I'm going to give them that, but I'm also doing everything else. This was your first time seeing this movie,
actually. Yeah. I am a theater nerd from way back, and the play is something that always you'd seen parodied in a million different ways, or at least I had, of, you know, someone who was very eloquent but not the most attractive, someone who had inner beauty but not the physical beauty, trying to woo someone. And then you had another character who was very physically attractive but was a complete moron, and they were kind of after the same girl. And, you know, one character kind of lending his voice to the other to woo her. And, I mean, it's a story that I was very, very familiar with. So it's interesting that I hadn't seen this version of it. And frankly, I was very taken by it. I really thought there is a genuineness to this film. And even when Steve Martin is doing kind of his trademark, you know, rapid fire snark, it's still very sincere.
Yeah.
And no, I love that.
It's really sincere, and it's super sincere as one of those small town movies.
Absolutely.
Like, it's a small town movie that loves its small town, and it's making fun of the small town life
in the town of Nelson
while being drenched in it, like, just and loving it. Like, it is so great in how it does it and how sincere it is. Let's begin at the beginning, because I am
a good place to start.
Fascinated by the opening of this film. The opening of this film is so expertly directed. I can't imagine anybody would walk into this movie not knowing the gag of the movie. And yet, while you're watching the movie, the way this director, first of all, this director loves master shots, loves long shots. Like, there's a lot of scenes that he shoots almost entirely in master, where there's no close-ups, there's no reaction shots. He's just letting the location be part of the action and be a character all its own.
Now, this is director, Australian director Fred, and I hope I'm pronouncing this correctly, Shepeshi, who made films after this, like The Russia House, A Cry in the Dark, IQ, Fierce Creatures, which was the follow-up, of course, to A Fish Called Wanda, that so many, and this is a real feather in the hat of this particular director. When you talk to people about A Fish Called Wanda and then its sequel, Fierce Creatures, you don't get a lot of, well, the first one was good, but the second, like, people talk about them on very equal footing.
Yeah.
And that's not easy to do considering how great A Fish Called Wanda is.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Take a drink. We haven't covered A Fish Called Wanda. We need to cover A Fish Called Wanda.
Yeah.
Hello, Wanda. But yeah, so what he does expertly in this opening sequence is we see Steve Martin walking to work. It's his whole routine of walking to work during the day, and we can't see the nose.
No.
Every angle, every shot is shot in a way that we see him as just this guy going to work. And if you didn't know what was coming, it would smack you in the fucking face. Like, it just, the minute it happens, like, whoa, did they just give him the note? No, they shot around it.
Yeah.
Expertly.
Yeah.
Expertly. And in fact, we will see a really masterful eye throughout this fucking film, because he does this repeatedly. Like, the how these shots are set up in this film, like, this is a movie that everyone has always talked about Steve Martin in. Nobody talks about this director in. He does this throughout the film. There's a scene later when Daryl Hannah gets locked out of her house, Her robe gets caught in the door. She's naked outside and needs to run around the house and run into the bushes so she doesn't get seen. And he does it in a long shot.
Yeah.
And you see nothing.
Well, that's
like, because the way it's framed, the way it's staged, like they have, so, and we see this time and again throughout the movie with visual gags, and we'll get to a lot of these because it's just so well done. But I marvel at how well he does that. Like, normally what you'd do is it'd be like, all right, well, we'll shoot this here and then we'll just cut to here and cut to here. And Daryl doesn't even need to take any clothes off. She'll wear a bikini. And it's like, no, they're going to do this and they're going to make it look legit from a distance. And it's going to be very classically executed.
When you think about the source material, which again is the French play, Cyrano de Bergerac, it is a story about, obfuscation?
Today, Junior?
Obfuscation? Are you having problems?
Sorry.
Do I need to feed you words while we do this? Is this like, is this a gag that just accidentally happened?
This is a gag that accidentally happened.
Obfuscate.
Obfuscation. It's a story about obfuscation because I still can't fucking say that word.
Here, let me write you a letter.
It's a story about...
let me write a letter to obfuscation about how much you love it.
Yeah, and to a shining tie in obfuscation. This is a story about hiding identity and hiding and in the bushes and not really revealing who you are. And it's really interesting that so many times throughout the movie, that becomes a visual theme. It becomes a hallmark of the movie. Like you were saying with the scene with Daryl Hannah, leaving the house naked. There's another, when they actually shoot the scene where the dim-witted fireman is on her lawn and
one
speaking up to her. One of the scenes of one of the dim-witted firemen. And he's in the bushes, and then he steps out to, become Chris. And he's standing, like, the framing device and really kind of concealing every, like, it is a masterclass and how you shoot things to withhold things.
Yeah.
And I really dug that about the movie.
And that is throughout. One of my favorite gags in the movie is when the fire truck is driving back later in the movie and they've got the ladder still up and he's running after him going, the ladder's up. And then we watch him walk up and he sees they've successfully parked the truck with the ladder up. And he's like, oh, and then he steps to the side and the camera moves just a little bit. And we see that it's actually smashed through the window upstairs, like that they've completely fucked it up. And just the way that sigh of relief leading into that gag, it's just so well executed. And the entire movie's like that. Like it's just full of it. And it's not shot in a way that you'd look at the cinematography and go, oh my God, the cinematography in this movie, except it's just the way it's all executed and staged is just so masterful. So yeah, and that leads into what then is a great performance by fucking Steve Martin.
Yeah. It's interesting to watch because you do see him as someone who has this physical peculiarity in this massive
nose. We haven't even actually mentioned it yet.
Yeah, he's got a massive nose.
But if you've never seen this, he's got a massive nose. Like, it is comically ridiculous.
Which is, again, a carryover from the play from 1897. It's the whole point. And this is why it's great. Because when you are doing something theatrical, you're doing something on stage, everything has to be larger than life so that it plays to the back of the room. So when you want to create a character in a play who has something about him that is going to, the other characters will be kind of grossed out by, or they'll kind of, you'll identify him as someone with a deformity. It has to be big so that the back of the room can see it. That's what's interesting about adapting this play into a movie is that the play is all about a character with a giant nose because that is the easiest thing to do in makeup so that the entire audience can see it.
Bizarre segue. I kind of wonder if there's a Cyrano de Bergerac porn parody. oh out God. There somewhere that's just got to be like a John Holmes style, you know, I'm in love with her, but I just, it's too big. Like, I imagine, I imagine someone's, and if they haven't, why haven't they? Like, they've literally parodied 66 Batman. I mean, like, go add a little class to your porn.
Screw an O to Bergiak. We'll figure
dude,
it out.
Dude, you've got it. Like,
this is the calling that I missed, was writing titles for porn, because all that is puns. It's all puns. Every fucking porn title is just, what's a thing that exists? How do we make that dirty?
How about
using puns?
Ooh, how about we call it American Booty?
right?
Shaving Ryan's Privates. both real movies, by the way.
Yeah. Pacific Rim Job. Like, it's just, the list goes on and on and on, folks. What were we talking about? Not porn? Okay, so
Roxanne. Romantic
Roxanne.
Films.
Roxanne! That's going to be the new Stargrove for this episode. Roxanne! By the way, why is that song not used in this movie?
Because it's about a prostitute.
Oh, good call. you know what? Asked, answered.
Because despite the fact that Daryl Hannah's character is very much, you know, just the object of affection and less of a character in this movie, they did go to efforts to make her more of a feminist character.
That's true.
And less of a stereotype.
That's very true.
They didn't quite get there, but there was an effort. Yeah. But again, it is the 80s, so the very fact that they made an effort was good for them.
Well, as they say in the movie, when you reach for the stars, the fall is quite hard.
Yes.
The fall is quite far and quite hard.
But so I imagine that having, you know, this brilliant astronomer who's just discovered a comet, who really wants an intelligent guy and is wowed by words more than anything else, probably doesn't want a theme song about her being a prostitute.
Well, maybe. But she doesn't have to put on the red light.
She doesn't have to. She doesn't have to put on the red dress tonight.
That's true.
But yeah, I imagine that is not a thing.
I know we made these jokes. I don't care if they're wrong or if they're right. But getting back to what we were talking about with Roxanne, so you have...
Boy, did that sting. Fuck you, Brian. I can play your game.
You did. You played it very well, Gordon. So yeah, what I love about Roxanne is that it is that kind of age-old story of like a guy who is in love with a girl, but is... And what I think is cool about the way they set up the character of, by the way, C.D., Cyrano de Bergerac.
Oh, yeah.
Whose name is Charlie, but they call him, of course, C.D. because his initials are C.D.B. because Cyrano de Bergerac. What I like about the way they set up that character is, despite the fact that he has this, I shudder to call it this, but this physical shortcoming of this this thing that detracts from the normal standards of attractiveness, is that he isn't really inside, he feels a lot of shame about it, but you would never know what to talk to him because he fucking owns it. And he owns it so well.
Oh, yeah.
Throughout the course of the movie.
Yeah, no, in fact, right down to the scene where he destroys, the pure stand-up sequence, like the movie's epic fight, if you will, where he's in a bar and some dumb shit, which this is the one, there's one moment in this movie that I'm like, wait a second, I can't wrap my head around this. There is a guy in the bar who picks a fight with CD and makes fun of him. And I'm like, where the fuck is this guy from? Yeah. How is he in this small town where everybody fucking knows who this guy is? Everybody knows who CD is. And you'd imagine seeing this guy on the street, it's like, dude, there's this guy I saw with the biggest nose. You'd be like, oh, yeah, CD. Oh, CD's great. Dude, he's fucking amazing. He's the fire chief. He's fucking awesome.
I have a theory about this. I think it's a matter of, yes, these people live in this town. Yes, normally they have that view. But when they're under the influence, they can't help themselves. Because if you notice, the first time this happens is not at the bar. It's when he's walking down the street and he encounters, as he calls it, two cokeheads. And one of them played by Kevin Nealon in his first film appearance. And of course, they give him shit about his nose as well. And you understand that CD's a man who can handle himself.
Yeah, in a great parody of the sword fight scene, yes, from Cyrano de Bergerac, he has a tennis racket and uses the tennis racket to beat the shit out of two tennis playing cokehead douchebags.
Justine Love.
Who inexplicably are picking a fight with this guy.
Well, and I think that's what it is whenever you get drunk or you get high, like you forget the fact that, one, CD's a great guy, and two, that he can fucking handle himself.
Yeah. No, he's incredibly competent, which that's the thing about this. And what I think is so great about this character in this film is if it were not for his nose, he would be essentially the ideal guy. Like, that's the thing. He's funny. He's witty. He's smart. He's got a great job. He's competent. He's probably the most liked and best guy in town.
And he is by far the most competent person at his job.
Oh yeah. Like, one of the people that works for him is the fucking mayor, who's a dumb shit, played brilliantly in a few small scenes by Fred Willard. Doing what Fred Willard does best, playing a fucking dumb shit.
That's true.
And elegantly, like, but you know what's interesting? I want to take a small segue because there's not going to be a lot of space to talk about Fred Willard because Fred Willard is in so little of the movie. But like, there's the moment when they're throwing the Oktoberfest thing and they're like he's the mayor. He wants to drum up some tourism to the town to bring some money in. And he's like throwing this event and you finally realize that nobody's fucking there. And he like has the moment where he swears at the end, where he realizes this guy's self-aware. He might be an idiot, but he's aware that that nothing is gonna fucking work. And I love that moment because it's a moment you don't often get from Fred Willard, where you just kind of always, when he's in a movie, you always just kind of accept that he's an idiot who's unaware of his surroundings. And here he's the idiot that is totally aware of his surroundings. He's just trying really hard. But like, he gives that great moment where he talks about, you know, they're going to train a cow to drink beer. and Steve Martin just goes on this epic rant of, it was brilliant, I was there, they're gonna say who came up with this genius, and I was standing right, and like, he does this whole big shtick on how great it was to be there.
It's
to
next
mock
level snark
how next yeah level. It's like he ratches it up to 11. Like, he just fucking goes for it, and it's really great. But yeah, so this scene that we're talking about, this guy picks a fight in the bar and calls CD Big Nose.
He says, hey, Big Nose. And oh my gosh.
And the bar stop. Like, they do everything but the record scratch.
Record scratch. Everybody looks like, oh, it's a Roadhouse moment. It's like somebody just fucking picked a fight with Dalton. Oh shit.
I can't wait to see how this plays out.
I thought your nose would be taller. But instead of doing what he did the first time, which was just beat the shit out of Kevin Nealon and his buddy, he says to him, the best you see somebody with an appendage like mine and the best you can come up with is Big Nose. I could absolutely come up with something better. And then he's like, how many better ones do you want me to come up with? And of course,
and he's like, throw a dart and wherever it lands, I'll do that many. And he throws it. He hits 20. He's like, all right, best 2 out of 3. And he throws it again. Hits 20. He's like, darts champion, 1987. And it's like, fuck. So now he's got to come up with 20 great insults. So, of course, it then becomes a 5-minute sequence of getting all of the nose jokes out of the way in one scene.
Start with obvious. Excuse me, is that your nose or did a bus park on your face? Meteorological. Everybody take cover. She's going to blow.
Fashionable. You know, you could de-emphasize your nose if you wore something larger, like Wyoming.
Oh. Personal. Well, here we are. Just the three of us.
It's a lot like what Richard Curtis does in his movies, where he opens up and the first 5 minutes he has some like string of swears. Yeah. You know, they do it in Love Actually, where they just have Bill Nye like, fuck shit, bugger, fucking a hole. You know, like, just let's get them all out and lay out the fact that, oh yeah, by the way, here we are, we've got an R rating. Well, he just lays it all out. He's like, all right, let's just get all the nose jokes out of the way up front. Boom, he drops it like an atomic bomb.
I feel like Eminem should have been in this scene. It's a rap battle.
Except it's one-sided. Like, it's just it's Eminem like destroying some guy.
Obvious.
You know,
excuse me.
That's what it is. You know what? That is the scene it is most like. It is like the scene at the end of 8 Mile when he calls out Falcon. and fucking just clowns him like nobody's been. Like, that is what that it is. That scene, it is the final scene from 8 Mile.
Did we just accidentally cast the Roxanne remake with Eminem?
I kind of want to see that fucking movie now. I want to see the rap battle version of Cyrano de Bergerac.
Oh my god! Oh my god! And he's sitting right. Oh my god, Cargill.
He's
Cargill.
Writing lines.
Writing letters. Yeah, no, he's writing letters like in Dear Stan. It's like, Dear Roxanne, hi, you didn't write me back. Isn't that weird? Like, it's the whole movie. It's just fucking Dear Stan, but it's Dear Roxanne. Get Hollywood on the phone! $1 million idea.
Wow, I kind of want to see that movie. I just really want to see Eminem's Roxanne.
It's called Dear Roxanne. Oh, we got to get this movie.
Oh, and it's just Roxanne.
Oh,
R-O-X-N. Roxanne.
I love this idea. I am so excited to be a part of it.
Let's get Anthony Mack back. What?
Yay!
What?
Woo! We can totally do this.
Yeah. So there. So there you guys go. That's how the magic happens. But he just does it great. And like some of these lines, like I remember these jokes better than I remembered this movie. Like, cause I saw this movie when it came out and I loved the movie, but like every time I think of Roxanne, I immediately go, I'm Earl Shav and I could paint that nose for $39.95. The most dated joke in that bit, by the way.
Yeah, I don't even get that one. Oh, and it's me saying that.
Earl Shive was they may still be around in some places, but was a series of, it was a chain, car detailing and painting place. And they had those commercials in the 80s where it'd be like, he would step out and be like, hi, I'm Earl Shab and I'll paint that car for $39.95. Cause that was the thing, is he had a flat price and we'll paint your car for this. You know, the price when you come in, this is what it's going to cost to paint your car. And so that's the joke, is essentially he's saying it would cost as much to paint the nose as it would to paint a car. And so that was what was funny about that joke. But yeah, what's it like to wake up in the it must be great to wake up in the morning and smell the coffee in Brazil. Like, those jokes stuck with me. And
there is the one that's a carryover from Cyrano de Bergerac,
which is
your nose is on time, but you're 15 minutes late. The line from Cyrano is, my nose precedes me by 15 minutes. So that's an actual carryover from the play. That's like a direct translation from the text of the play. So I like that one a lot. I also really love the fact that he stops at one point and says, how many is that? And someone says, 14, chief, and he keeps going. If you count, he was actually at about 18. So he does about 24, 25. And they say that, and the reason given for that is, well, they're going to have to cut one or two.
But they were all so good.
No, they're going to have to cut one or two for the TV version.
Oh, yeah.
Because on TV, they couldn't say the one where it was like a man who can please two women at once.
Yes. Kind
of thing. But it's like, okay, but you're still giving yourself about a padding of six of those. That's fucking impressive.
You know what? I don't fucking care. I wasn't counting. It's just laughing. Like, that's the thing, is that scene is just so good, and it's so great. And if you don't already love CD at the time, you do.
And my favorite one is, by the way, he subcategorizes all of them, which I think is great.
Yeah.
My favorite one being obscure. Well, I'd hate to see the grindstone.
Yeah.
And like,
there's a moment where the audience gets it.
To the grindstone. Okay. Catch up, everybody. Catch up. Which I thought was really, really
yeah.
great.
So Martin is so good. So fucking good.
And he's taking ownership of that. That is, I think, the most positive message of this entire movie, is if you watch the way Steve Martin, for all of his longing for Roxanne, for all of his desire to have a regular nose, like, he is fucking owning that, and everyone loves him because you cannot bring him down by making fun of his nose. It is impossible. He will fucking own you. And that's what that scene is all about.
Yeah, he's, yeah, and it really, really, really fucking works and serves as a great centerpiece for then what goes on, because also in that scene, he earns the real, real respect of Roxanne. And that scene ends up paying off the end of this movie because it not only sets up this sets up the confusion that happens over in the next few scenes, but it also sets up the end because, you know, the next morning, his best friend, who's played by Shelley Duvall.
By the way, I realize I have not seen a lot of Shelley Duvall movies. I've seen The Shining. I've seen Popeye. End of list. Like, this movie was
really
like what I, unless.
Yeah, no, you have, there's, she's in other stuff that you do, you've seen and you love that you're just forgetting about.
It's entirely possible.
Time Bandits.
Oh yes, of course. You're right. You're right. Yeah. When you can name another movie that we've literally done for this podcast. Yeah.
Yeah.
I will admit that I'm wrong there, but I don't.
There is a lot of stuff that you probably haven't seen. I'm just like, for a second, I pick it up and go, oh yeah, no, I'm pretty sure you haven't seen Home Fries.
No.
Yeah.
I haven't seen the original Frankenweenie. I haven't seen, yeah, there's a lot of her stuff that it's, I haven't seen Robert Altman's Nashville, which is like,
have you seen Annie Hall?
No, ooh. I haven't actually.
Ooh.
So yeah,
that's a CinemaSin admission.
It's on the record.
Yeah. But yeah, no, so he's talking to her and she's really likable in this film. Like, I know a lot, she doesn't connect with a lot of folks. She was a very odd actress. Is an odd actress. Here she's great. She's so warm. Her and Steve Martin connect so fucking well. And you definitely get this right from the get-go when they sit down and start talking. Within 3 seconds, you're like, oh, I get the relationship here. These are two best friends in a small town, like, who are clearly the two smartest people in town who get together to snark about everyone else in town. And she's not given a lot to do here, but she's so likable. And in this scene afterwards, she's like, oh, yeah, no, Roxanne just went on and on about it. She couldn't stop talking about you. And it's like, oh, dude, I'm in. Like, he's in. Except what he doesn't know is that she has now fallen in lust accidentally, oddly enough, with the fireman. Because, again,
yeah,
she sees the looks of the fireman. He's really cute. But it's not till they're in a bookstore and there's a misunderstanding where he is getting he's picking up a copy of Being in Nothingness by Jean-Paul Sartre.
Because Camus can do, but Sartre is smarter.
Yeah.
Thanks, Jay Sherman.
There you go.
But yeah, no, that's...
It stinks.
That's classic farce. Like, when you have a misunderstanding of that level that completely sets up how characters are going to interact with each other for the rest of the story,
and
perfect farce.
And it also sets up a whole other joke because there is a character actor in this film.
Oh, by the way, there are 1,000 character actors in this movie. The fire brigade, the volunteer fire brigade, which is the analog of the slapdash military battalion in the play, it's just chock full of guys. It's like, oh, I recognize you from that. I recognize you from that. I recognize you from that.
Oh, yeah. No, there's a lot of people in this movie, but Michael J. Pollard in particular.
Yeah, Michael J. Pollard's been in at least 4 other Junk Food Cinema movies.
Yeah, well, because he like, was that character, go-to character actor that was fucking in everything for, like, 5 years.
Yeah.
Like, he's just like, we need a kooky character. Who do we get? We get Michael J. Pollard. He had to have been great to work with. But, like, you'll know him from Tango and Cash as the techie. You'll know him as the homeless guy from Scrooge.
You'll know him as the guy that Dolph Lundgren interrogates in the strip club in I Come in Peace. Like, he just showed up at everything.
Yeah, he was, for a time being, he was all over the place.
Not to mention John Capellos, who is the janitor from the Breakfast Club, is one of the other volunteer firemen.
Oh, yeah.
And of course, a very young
Damon Wayans.
Damon Wayans.
And yeah, and of course, as we already mentioned, Fred Willard.
Yeah.
Also, like, you look at these firemen, you're like, holy shit, like, this team. But so Michael J. Pollard is one of the local idiots, except he's such an idiot. He's actually one of those smart idiots where he wants to read.
We call them smidiots.
Yeah. He wants to read Jean-Paul Sartre's Being in Nothingness, but is too embarrassed to go in and get the book himself.
Such a great little touch.
It really is. Like, he's like, thanks, I'm so embarrassed to even get. Like, he doesn't want to go in and get the smart person's book because he also knows he's surrounded by idiots. And so he sends in the new fireman. And so Roxanne, this brilliant fucking astronomer, sees the sexy, shy fireman picking up a copy of Being in Nothingness and is like, oh shit, he's intellectual too. This is my dreamboat. Yeah. And of course, and that's what ultimately sets up what I think is so great about this movie in terms of other romantic comedies. I think one of the great things, I think one of the problems with a lot of romantic comedies, the type of romantic comedy that people think about when they think of romantic comedies, when they dislike romantic comedies, are romantic comedies in which the characters are perfect in every way, except they just can't find the right person, or they just can't keep their life together, and they just need to find, you know, it's the Jennifer Lopez character in so many movies.
Oh my God, where she's just so busy all the time.
She's so busy and can't get her life together, and nobody realizes how attractive she is.
Luckily, here's a dude to fix all of her problems.
Yes, and that is a cliche that she played way too many times. And the thing is the dude, oh, who is he? Oh, well, he's really good looking, and he's a lawyer by night, and he runs a stall at the farmer's market because he believes in sustainability and just can't get a girl. And it's like, fuck you. That guy gets so much tail. It's not even funny. He's fucking his way through the tri-state area. Fuck off. That guy doesn't get laid. Like, this is, and let's put these two people together who just can't get, you know, find the right person. And oh, it turns out we're the right person. No, fuck you. You know, it's the best romantic comedies are the ones where you have these characters that there's just something very believably wrong about why they don't have someone. Why does CD not have someone as great as he is? It's because of his nose. Yeah. Like, it's clearly, it's girls have not been able to get past that. He is best friends with every woman in town,
yeah,
and they love him, but they don't love him.
Yeah.
And that's instantly what happens here. He gets friend zoned immediately by Daryl Hannah, who is, you know, this astronomer who's in town for the summer.
But here's the difference. Here's the difference between friend zone in this movie and friend zone in the modern context, which is a bunch of guys who feel entitled to be with a girl. And when that doesn't happen, it's because she has arbitrarily decided that it's bullshit. It's a bullshit distinction now to forgive a lot of things. The difference between current friend zone and friend zone in this movie is that Steve Martin's never bitter. Steve Martin is so not bitter about it that he actually helps Chris woo Roxanne because it's a way that he can get his words to her.
Yes. And she just doesn't see him as a romantic possibility because of his nose. She can't see past it. Despite the fact that she is otherwise enamored by this guy.
Well, it'd be tough for anybody to see past it. Am I right, folks?
There it is.
He's going to kick my ass.
Well, God, you know, one of the things, speaking of going back to the nose and how they deal with it, one of the other things about this movie is how Chris, the fireman, doesn't run into CD for a while.
Yeah.
They keep missing each other the first weekend he's in town, and everybody's like, have you met him yet? And they're like, no, everybody keeps talking about it, but I really don't think it's going to be an issue. I'm not, like, it's one of those things. It's like somebody who's like, I'm not racist. And then gets put into a situation where all of a sudden it's like, oh, holy shit, I'm a racist.
And then become Archie Bunker immediately.
Like, and this is the thing where he's just like, I'm not looking, you know, I'm not going to be bothered by it. Like, so what? He has a big nose. And then he's there and he can't take his eyes off. And he's like, it's like, he turns into the skit. He's like, they told me, but oh my God.
And I think if this movie has one problem, I feel like the Chris character leans in a little too much. To the stupid. Like, and I get that there is a certain cartoonish aspect to, like, the size of the proboscis going on. Like, I get that, but the way Steve Martin owns it and just moves on, it never feels that over the top to me. Whereas the stupidity of Chris is like Kronk from Emperor's New Groove level silly.
You know, I don't know if I totally agree with that, because he's still competent, and he still has good ideas.
The fireman, yes, but yeah, he's so stupid that, like, it, like the scene where he's that scene in particular.
Like, I don't think he's stupid so much as socially awkward.
Yeah, but even that, to the level that it's just like, yeah, but you've been around humans before, right? Like, it gets to a level where he feels like less like a competent fireman and more like Stanley the janitor from UHF, where it's just like, what are you?
Yeah,
what are you
no,
doing
that's
here?
Not wrong. And I guess I feel that it works because of the level of farce going on, like, because how everything else is accentuated.
I suppose you're right about that, but there was just something a little bit, and I don't know if it's possibly the level of acting talent kind of, and I don't feel like Rick Rockovich. I don't even, this guy's name is, again, sounds like a cartoon character in and of itself. But Rick Rossovich, you know, he's been in Top Gun. He's been in a few other movies that you would recognize, but not somebody you would go, oh, yes, one of my favorite actors of the 80s. Rock Rissovich, Rishavashavar, Rashomon. I can't, this, I can't even fucking remember this
name. It's pronounced Obfuscate.
Obfuscate. Hey, this is an all couples Obfuscate. Anyway, moving on.
Roxanne!
So that was my only problem with the movie, is I felt like Rick Ross, the Bossovich, was a little too over the top compared to everything else that was going on. Even as farcical, you're right, as it is, I feel like there is a certain level that he is achieving that's just a little beyond everybody else.
Yeah. But I mean, you kind of need that in order for the bumbling of the words to work.
By the way, bumbling of the words is pretty much what's going on with me throughout this entire episode.
I find the delightful irony of it.
That, which is why I'm not cutting it out.
That the writer has to keep feeding you words for this episode. Somebody's going to think we're deliberately doing this as a gag.
Which is why, like, I wanted to edit out every attempt at me saying obfuscate. Oh, look, I can fucking say it now. Thanks,
Well, now
Cyrano.
because now you have the mental, you have the word thing going on with tying it to couple skate.
Yes.
Mental obfuscate. That's mental obfuscation.
I believe that's called a Johnny Mnemonic. Advice.
It's an obfuscation nation.
Device, fuck me running.
Can't, well played, Clerks. Well played.
Man, just a mouthful of marbles.
Red leather, yellow leather. Red leather, yellow leather.
This is why you do
red
vocal leather, warm-ups yellow leather. Before you go on the radio, folks.
There it
vocal
is.
Vocal warm-ups.
So yeah, but anyhow, so as you know, if you haven't seen this movie, if you don't know Cyrano de Bergerac, if you've gotten this far and you're like, what the fuck is this movie about? For fuck's sake.
They should really tell us before the end of the episode.
He writes, you know, Chris is, you know, believed to be an intelligent, good-looking guy. And so, you know, Daryl Hannah just throws herself, Roxanne throws herself at him, and he just doesn't know how to fucking deal with it. And so he tries to get some help from CD. And this is where Roxanne's flaw comes into play, because Roxanne's biggest flaw, how does a beautiful, brilliant woman not have a steady? How is she not already married? Well, because as we learn through this thing, her standards are way too fucking high. Mm-hmm. Like, she meets this guy who ticks all the boxes, but has a big nose, so she doesn't even consider him. And then she meets this attractive guy and is like, well, for a fling, and then finds out that he's intellectual. It's like, oh, these are all my boxes. But of course, no, you're not, you know, you're not going to walk into a small town and find this gorgeous single guy who is also a genius. Like, it's just, you've set your bar too high. You need to figure out what it is you really want. And that's what she doesn't figure out until the end of this movie, when she realizes, this is what I'm looking for in a guy.
So here's my question to you, because one of the interesting things about this movie is that Chris is presented kind of third hand as a character who is a ladies' man. He's so great with the ladies.
He's got to be, because he's a good-looking guy.
But it's never anything he says about himself. It's John Capellos' character keeps calling him, like, you're a champ with the ladies, you're a champ with the ladies, and he starts spreading that around, and then you understand that Chris is so fucking awkward.
Well, it was Fred Willard that first says it at first, and introduces that to John Capella, who then is like, oh, yeah, no, I heard this from the mayor, that you're a ladies' man, and the mayor is just like, I bet you're a ladies' man. Like, this is literally how this reputation gets built that doesn't exist, and then all of a sudden, like, he doesn't build into it, but as soon as, you know, it's presented, oh, I could be a ladies' man, and oh, the ladies in town like me. Oh, shit, maybe I am a ladies' man. He buys into it, but of course, he's not, because he can't fucking talk to girls.
You'd think a fireman would be aware of the dangers of gaslighting.
Pew, pew, pew.
Sorry, that was my David Caruso moment.
There it is. But that's what's so interesting about what happens to his character. He legit falls head over heels in love with the first girl he can actually have a conversation with, like somebody who's on his same level and who's impressed by him, like who's never been out of her small town and is just impressed by the fact that he's been to these cities. Mm-hmm. Like, he's actually knows how to operate a car and go to cities. Like, just impresses the fuck out of her. And he's just like, fuck it, I'm going to Reno to become a dealer. Like, that's, yeah. Or Tahoe, I think they're going.
Tahoe. Yes.
And it's like he's finally found he's found who he belongs with. And it's so interesting how he trucks off like that and how big of a coward he is. It's like, you know, should we tell her? Nah, she'll figure it out. Pew, gone. Like, the guy's not a good guy.
And at the other end of that spectrum, the competency of Steve Martin, not only the words, not only being a great fireman, they add an element to that that I think is, like, at first I was like, this is silly. And then I realized, no, this is just building into the competency of this character. He's a fucking acrobat.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
The way he scales balconies and trellises, like, what the hell, man?
Oh, another brilliant touch of this. Again, watching Steve Martin himself climb fucking houses from long shots. So it's like, oh, yeah, no, that's fucking him. That's great. Really masterfully done.
Yeah.
And 100%. Yeah, they never actually mention that he's an acrobat. He just is. And it's like, well, he is a fireman.
It's just another thing he can do well.
He's just great all around. He's just a wonderful, great guy. And just nobody, you know, can really see far enough to love him beyond his nose. And finally, someone has to do that because she has to realize I was in love with him all along and I couldn't see it.
Yeah.
And that's what I think really works here is that's a very human flaw. And to have that be her chief flaw explains exactly why she's single and skirts around that issue that so many of these films have.
And I love that despite all of this, despite this really interesting layered message that's going on, despite this adaptation of, at that point, a 90-year-old play, you still get Steve Martin bits. You still get classic Steve Martin gags. Like, I love where she's locked out of her house. He's like, let me get my tools. He walks all the way to that house with a red toolbox. He opens it up, and there's just a credit card inside.
Yeah.
And he uses it to pick the lock. I also love the fact that, you know, as you mentioned before, the I can come up with 20 better insults is stop the movie, I'm going to do stand-up. And there's a long tradition in comedy of stop the movie, I'm going to do stand-up. And when it works really well, you get things like Eddie Murphy in Trading Places in the jail cell.
Yeah.
And when it fails, you get things like Rudy Ray Moore in Dolomite, where it's like, wait, guys, wait, what happened? Why is the movie stopped? Somebody, it's like if you're on a Ferris wheel and it suddenly stopped and you're like, we're stuck at the top. Somebody needs to make this shit go forward again. That's kind of what happens in Dolomite. But it is a rich tradition in comedy where people who either are stand-up comics or fancy themselves stand-up comics will have a moment where the movie will stop entirely just so that they can do their shtick. So, yeah. And it works.
But it works
really well
here.
Yeah. For sure.
I am dying to find out what your junk food pairing is this week.
Before we go into the junk food pairing, I have to bring a seldom used but very important segment of the show back, the Trivial Trek. The Trivial Trek is where we do a reading of some of the worst and most incomprehensible user-submitted trivia on IMDb. And oh boy, did I find a doozy for this one.
Let's do it.
It goes like this. I'm reading this word for word. In the beginning of the movie, we see the number two, guys carrying their skis, apostrophe S, possessive, that give, quote, Charlie a hard time just because of his nose. The taller slash darker haired man is Kevin Nealon, quote, from Saturday Night Live, oddly punctuated as well. And the fair haired man is comedian Rich Schneider. His more popular stand-up routine included him saying, I'm Canyon Man, then does the sound of the electronic door locks. He is credited as drunk number one, but we get him here, get pissed, Rich, I am pissed. He is seen one more time later in the film. When is it? And then he answers his own question. It is just after the fat, tough guy in the darts bar says, where a going, big nose? When then we see fair-haired Rich, it's the same fucking name, seated at a table with a girl. Rich gives his body language to the tough guy, shaking his head and mouthing no, as if to say, do not mess with this guy. He will mess you up. E-. What the fuck does that even mean? What does any of that mean?
No idea.
Could you follow that? I could not follow that to save my life.
No, I really could.
But it is written by E-, so I'm assuming that means the dude from Entourage. I'm not sure. Did I find this helpful? Not so much. I'm going to kind of break down the junk food pairing the way Steve Martin breaks down the insults in the movie.
Okay.
So obvious would be a glass of wine with a straw, because throughout the film, the only way that poor Steve Martin can drink wine out of a wine glass because of his proboscis is with a straw. And there's a great comedy bit where he asks Daryl Hannah, do you have a straw? When she hands him a glass of wine. And she says, no wine. He goes, no reason. And then proceeds to try and drink that glass of wine to no avail. Bonus points, however, if obscure, you are drinking that glass of wine at the bar at a Grindstone Charlie's. By the way, I thought this was a national chain growing up. It's apparently not outside of my home state of Indiana. Grindstone Charlie's was just another like TGI Fridays, Chili's type of place. But it is called Grindstone Charlie's. And if you remember, the C in CDB stands for Charlie, as they refer to him several times in the film, who makes a great joke during that 20 insult scene about the grindstone. So have yourself a glass of wine with a straw in it at a Grindstone Charlie's. It is both obvious and obscure. I don't know. Is that too much? I feel like it's probably a little too much.
I would, no, sure. Whatever.
Thank you. The support I get from you is really the reason I do this show.
Yes.
Speaking of this show, it is over. Thank you so much for joining us. You can once again find us, our back catalog, iTunes, on Blog Talk Radio. You can please, if you go to iTunes, leave us a review, you know, a rating and a review. We really want to move up that list. And the things that you guys have been writing about us have been phenomenal. We really appreciate it. We're very humbled by it. Please continue to do that. At Junk Food Cinema on Twitter, facebook.com/junkfoodcinema, patreon.com/junkfoodcinema if you want to support us. And this week, we are once again returning, as far as the patron content is concerned, we're once again returning to the summer of 77 with a little movie called Suspiria.
Suspiria.
Really excited to talk about that movie. And Cargill, where can people find you on the interwebs?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Massaworm, MASSAWYRM. Also, guys, I got a book coming out.
Guys, here's the thing. A book, it's like a movie.
In just a few days.
But it's on paper.
Sea of Rust. People are digging it. I hope you guys do too. Please, it's available wherever you buy books. You can get the Kindle version. You can get an audio version. You can get a hard cover book at your local bookstore or from Amazon or wherever you buy books. So please, I would very much love it if you could check this book out. You'll find me around. I'm actually at Dragon Con this weekend. If you were in Atlanta, come see me at Dragon Con. I've got like 9 different appearances that weekend. It's going to be great. I'm going to have a great time. Also, I'm going to be in Denver on September 15th, showing Battle Beyond the Stars at the Alamo Drafthouse. It looks like I'm going to have a Drafthouse event here in Austin, showing A Boy and His Dog, the Harlan Ellison post-apocalyptic movie. I'm going to appear in Dallas, and it looks like Houston in October. Fingers crossed. Dear God, Houston.
Yeah, please, by the way, I mentioned this on Twitter and on Facebook. Red Cross, whatever charity you support, throw some money Houston's way. Like, get on board with helping out Houston, because Hurricane Harvey really just wrecked that entire town. So do whatever you can to support them 100%.
If you're one of our Austin listeners, Austin Pets Alive is taking a bunch of Houston stray pets taking in the ones they find, taking in the ones that they had to move out of shelters. They need excess food and such. So always check out with them and see what they need right now if you are local and can lend a hand. We have a lot of friends in Houston. To those of you who have been displaced or are dealing with that, our hearts are with you guys. Make it through for us, man. We kind of need fucking Houston. I go to Houston once a year. It kills me what's happening out there. So stay dry, stay safe.
100%. And guys, I'm going to go ahead and wrap this episode up. And what's that? Oh, you thought we were being ironic. Irony. Oh, no, we don't get that here. Roxanne.